Welcome to Next Steps, a podcast from Black Hawk Church. We believe that following Jesus is a lifelong journey. So no matter where you're at, there's always a next step to take. Each week on this podcast, we'll create space for real conversations about the questions we wrestle with, the challenges we face, and the hope we find in Jesus. Our goal isn't to have it all perfectly figured out, but to walk faithfully towards Jesus together. We're so glad you're joining us. Let's dive in. Well, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Steps podcast. My name is Christian, and I'm your host for today. And believe it or not, we've come to the very last episode in our Advent series. I'm joined again by two of our worship leaders, Hannah Bussey and Trevor Kleinmeier, and we're going to bring it home for the series.
Bring it home.
Oof. Yeah.
It sounds intense. Try.
Yeah.
Better be good. Don't mess it up.
Yeah. This is the fourth week of Advent, and so the theme we're focusing on is love. And we're pairing this with the practice of beholding or adoring. And Daniel Owen introduced this practice to our church recently in a Sunday sermon. But in case you'd missed it or anything, I'd love to just kind of give an idea of what we're talking about when we talk about beholding. This isn't something that we talk about or do in church a lot, beholding or adoring, or not naming it that way. But Rich Velotis, who wrote the devotional that kind of inspired this series, he defines beholding as patient attentiveness. So like when someone says, when God says, behold, it's like pay attention to what's happening. So it's kind of like paying attention to what God's doing and his love and orienting ourselves towards that. So essentially the practice of beholding or adoring is just taking a moment to sit in awe and wonder and love with God and pay attention to what he's doing. This could look like thinking about God and orienting our love and attention towards him, but it can also include beholding the incredible things he's made, including people, you know, showing our love towards people, or just admiring the things that he's made or the things that he's done with love and adoration. And I was introduced to this practice just over a year ago, and honestly, it's transformed my relationship with God and the way I worship. And so it's been super powerful to me, and I've shared it with other people. And so I'm really excited to talk with you two about it.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Christian.
So let's start here. When you reflect on the theme of love or maybe the practice of beholding and adoration, what comes to mind? Do you have thoughts or reactions? Is this a practice that you guys are like familiar with, or where are you at?
Do you want to go first, Hannah?
I feel like I've been going first a lot. I think we should hear from you first.
Sounds good. Yeah, I don't know if I've really thought about it as I mean, it is a practice, but and more just like kind of happens maybe a little bit more naturally in my kind of life. So like as I was thinking about this, a moment that just recently happened to me was I took my dog Dasher to this trail. It's the Ice Age Trail.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know anyone listening to this, don't get me in trouble because I know you're supposed to have him on a leash. I usually put him on a tiny little leash so he can kind of run and be free. I never see anyone out there. Nonetheless, we were out there, and this trail, basically, you like descend into a valley, and then you come up kind of on this big hill. And then as you come up on this hill, you can see, it's like a high point, so you can see down into like other valleys and all these hills in the background. And it was just a moment of like, it had just snowed, so there was like a foot of snow, and it was white, like wispy snow, and just looking out over these hills, it was just like a moment where just like, man, I feel small right now in the best way. Like, this is one of the most beautiful, like, things. And I'm not actually usually a nature person. So to, like, just have that moment of, like, this is so incredibly beautiful. And, like, it was just like a thank you, God moment of just beholding creation. Mm. Of, like, this is just so stunningly beautiful. And I get to just stand here and just experience it and just be in awe of it. And so that was like the first thing that came up when I was just looking at like kind of your notes and prepping for this was just like, that was just a real natural moment of beholding like, God, you are just so big, so grand. I mean, this is just a tiny little piece of your creation, but it is just stunning in this moment. And just thank you for this gift of space to just be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
That was like a really fresh, organic moment you had there that kind of God brought you to. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we can all probably hopefully point to moments in our life when maybe we had a moment like that in creation, or maybe we had that moment when listening to music or at a concert, or, you know, but some moment where you just kind of felt small, like I like how you described it, Trevor. I like that, where you kind of have you kind of get put in your place in the best way, right?
Yes, yes.
Yep. You have a sense of the transcendence and the greatness and the beauty of God, and kind of the fact that you are a creature and he's the creator, right? That you're a part of this creation that he's made. You're not, we're not God walking around. We're part of the creation, you know, and the creator is so much bigger than all of it. So that sounds,
yeah.
Thanks for describing that.
Yeah, totally.
I think for me, actually, when you said beholding Christian, that was a new term for me in terms of thinking about it as like a spiritual practice. Like I've heard a lot about their spiritual practices, obviously prayer, time in the word, fasting, solitude and silence and all these types of things. But beholding was a new one for me. I pretty much had thought of behold as like kind of this, it's this old King James type of word that basically means looking at something or going and seeing something. Going and taking a look at something. So I'm like, what does that mean in terms of a practice? But I think when you tie it to adoring, that makes a lot of sense to me. And yeah, and then I started thinking about what that has looked like in my life. And I think there are a lot of different ways that can look. But I also think about my own struggle to incorporate that into my life. And I think we can talk about this probably more as it goes on. But I think there are a lot of forces that work against us doing this in our 100%. Life, and a lot of forces that work against us having these moments like you described, Trevor, where we feel small and we kind of get put in our place. There's way more forces telling us that we are at the center of the universe and what I want and my story are the most important thing ever, you know, and my own comfort, getting my needs and wants met are the most important thing ever. So it's become, I think, probably increasingly more rare for us to have those spaces to just lose ourselves in the majesty and the greatness of something or someone outside ourselves. So, But, yeah, the beholding word, that was a new one for me, a little bit new. So I appreciate the chance to learn about it and prep for this and to talk about it today. So,
One of the ways – so it was introduced to me. I was in this small group of other, like, ministry workers from all around the country, and we were, like, taking turns leading the group in different – like devotionals. And so one of the women, she led us in this practice of beholding. She had all of us like close our eyes, and we spent time, we each just like organically would just call out different things that we had seen or experienced lately that were beautiful. So she's just like, just call out all of the beautiful things that you have seen. And at first, there was a lot of quiet and a lot of gaps between things. And then it started to be, it was like kind of a snowball effect where it was like, and then it was like more and more and more and more. And the time between got shorter. And I noticed too that we all were starting to like, we ended the practice and everybody was smiling and also like enjoying each other's things, if that makes sense. So like someone talked about how their kid had just gotten baptized, and everyone in the crowd is just like, you know, just like enjoying that. Like, it's not our story. Yeah. We don't know that person, it's kid. We don't know them. But there's something like beautiful, and it's just this like encouragement and reminder that like there's beauty and goodness all around us. And when this woman introduced the practice to us, she was talking about how so again, we're all ministry workers, but she was like, especially as ministry workers, but it's not exclusive to us. Like, we just witness a lot of darkness and difficulty and pain. We get to walk with people, and it's a privilege, but we walk with people on their hardest days and on their best days, but we're witnessing so much negativity. And even just, even if you don't work in ministry, like, the news cycle in particular, I think she shared a statistic and it was like, 99% of the news we see is negative. It's bad news. And and she also said that there's this study that said like we experience more, a person alive today experiences more tragedy in 1 year than people living 100 years ago would experience in their lifetime.
just through the news cycle.
Yes, because we are aware of the global suffering. Like, it's not just, it's not localized anymore. And so it just, like, leads to this, like, immense difficulty and suffering that just compounds, and we carry other people's suffering. And anyway, it waits on us. And so she offered this practice of beholding as, like, a way to kind of counter and push against that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I've, like, continued to use it and share it with other people. But I would love to talk about a little bit, like, what are some of the things that make this difficult? Like, what kind of gets in the way? What makes it hard to, like, have these moments of adoration or beholding or gratitude, however you might want to name it?
Yeah. Okay, I have an first answer to that.
Yeah.
Can you say what the definition was again? It is patient.
Patient attentiveness.
Okay, so both of those things, don't you feel like there are potentially forces in our culture and in our world that are working against both of those character qualities?
100%.
Against patience. I mean, just think about instant gratification, how quickly we can get our wants satisfied. Mm-hmm. You know, if I want something, I can go on Amazon and I can get it overnight.
In a day or two.
Yes. Yep. You know, if I want to watch a movie, I can just get it on streaming and pay for it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to, like, go to Blockbuster anymore. I'm aging myself.
Or, but we used to do that. I remember when you would go and, like, they wouldn't have the movie you wanted. Yeah. It's like, oh, too bad. I guess you can't order that movie today.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I think there are so many ways in which, I mean, even, like, going back hundreds of years and, like, in an agrarian, like, society where everybody is subsistence farming or whatever, you wouldn't have fruit unless it was the season where fruit grows.
Yes, strawberries are available in June.
Yes.
That's it.
Right. Exactly. And maybe you'd can and stuff like that, but you would be able to have something when it was the season for it, and otherwise you'd have to wait for it. Mm-hmm. And I think we've eliminated a lot of the natural places in our lives where we wait.
Totally.
I mean, even I think, like, well, this is kind of annoying, but I hate being on hold, right? Like, I hate being on hold. And if there's an ever an option where it's like, we'll save your place in line and we'll call you back. I'm like, thank you.
That's the best. Yeah.
And I actually love that, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's one more example of a place where I can feel like, I don't need to waste my time. I can be efficient. I don't need to, like, wait for anything, because waiting feels like wasted time to us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like to feel like our time is being wasted or that we're not getting what we want. It feels like we're not making effective use of our time by patiently waiting. And I think also attentiveness. I mean, just think about, like, social media, right? And scrolling, and I don't know. I just feel like clickbait. Everything is wired now for us to get quick shots or sound bites of things, not to, like, actually attentively read maybe, like, a longer form piece on something.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, we're trying to learn about things in ways that don't require us to actually attentively dig into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even the use of AI, it's like, tell me what this book is about in 100 words or less.
Yeah,
or
totally.
You know, it's like, you don't even have to, we don't have to do any of the consumption. We're like, give us the, what's the short version? What's the spark notes of this thing?
Yeah. Right, yeah. And it's funny because in theory, I think we think that stuff is going to give us better lives, that we don't have to do all the hard work to, like, that we can get more done faster and we can learn about more and, you know, consolidate more info more quickly and get more achieved, get more accomplished. But I don't know always that we are necessarily better for it.
Yeah.
So I wonder about the other ways it's rewiring our brains to work against us.
Totally.
Being able to be patient people or attentive people, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I would absolutely second that. I feel like the busyness of life, like, the, especially in our culture of just trying to cram in as much as possible into a day. I mean, just based on, like, efficiency, like, the standards of our culture, like, what is of utmost importance, talking, like, the world's standards of, like, efficiency and trying to get as much as you can get done, and this almost, like, trying to attain all of it too, where you have a balanced family life, a balanced work life, a balance, you know, like, all of these things. I feel like, yeah, and very few places are we able to practice patience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just been like eliminated for us, like what Hannah was saying. Like, the things that sell now are the things that are getting rid of patients.
Yeah.
DoorDash. You don't have to go and pick up, drive.
You don't even have to. Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to drive through the drive-thru anymore, man. You can just order it on your phone. Right, it'll come right to you. Like, like these things. It's like, those are the things that are like selling the most in our culture the past couple years. AI is like, we're just going to delete all of the information, all that process of you gathering information and then coming to your own conclusion. We're just going to do all that for you. So all you have to do is just type it in the chat. Still doesn't even have to be perfectly worded. We'll figure it out for you.
Yeah. It's eerie. It's eerie, Trevor.
It is.
Yeah. And so I think, to Hannah's point, like, I think we have cut out in our society a lot of those places where, when I was thinking about beholding too, that word, I actually thought about a year ago, we went to the, is it the Chazen Art Museum, which is right on campus? Yeah, which is right on campus. And Adam had us, that's our downtown pastor, he had us do this exercise where we stared at one painting for 10 minutes, and then you came up with what you thought the painting was trying to communicate.
10 minutes. That's a long time.
It was such a wild experience because I was like, I don't know that I look at really anything for longer than like maybe a minute. I mean, like TV, but you're watching it go by.
It's moving.
Yeah. There's always like new scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
There's just very few places where you're looking at one thing for an extended amount of time. And that's a little bit of like what beholding is when we think of that.
Yeah.
It's like, and it was so cool because I just thought to myself, like, I haven't done this in a really long time. Mm. And you start, as you look at it longer, you start noticing like different things of like, oh, I missed that. There's actually like this little, I was looking at some like construction site. It was just like a bunch of steel bars everywhere. But then as you looked closer, there's actually other layers to it. You're like, oh, there's like another layer there that I didn't see before. And it's just, it was a fascinating exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I just don't. And that's why, like, I feel like those moments that naturally happen in beholding happen so rarely, at least for me.
Yeah. Where your attention is like arrested by something.
Like, like on that particular day that I had Dasher, my dog, and we were walking, I didn't have any place to be. I had like 3 hours before my next thing. And the trail was like, you know, it's like a 3 hour walk. It would take like an hour to do. So I wasn't in a rush, one. I didn't have a place to be, so I could just actually be present in the moment. And I feel like that was so important in order to experience, you know, the beholding moment was just not having something competing for my fast pacedness of life.
Well, and as I'm listening to that, I totally agree. And I'm also thinking about people who are listening who might feel like, I never have 3 hours to take a 1 hour walk and have nowhere to be. Like, I don't know when that would ever be possible in my life. You know,
100%. It was a rare day for me too.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel like,
totally.
Like, number one, I have a lot of compassion for that because I think I've been in seasons of my life where I felt like that would be the biggest gift, and also it doesn't feel possible.
Yeah.
And what do you do in those seasons? But also, are there ways in which we could carve out spaces like that? But for whatever reason, we don't take the intention to actually carve out that type of space. Like, I'm trying to think about whether it's worth going here. A few years ago in my own practice with God, I kind of stumbled upon a new way of being with God, because I think I had always thought of prayer as this very effortful thing where I had to like kind of make this speech to God and find out the right words to say, you know.
Remember all the things you said you would pray for.
Right, try to work your way down a list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like very, it felt like work, you know.
I can be that way.
Yeah. Like make sure I check all the boxes. Mm-hmm. And I think through spiritual direction, God introduced me to this kind of this new fresh way of being with him. And nobody called it this except me, but I would just call it do nothing with God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where, and maybe some people would call it like centering prayer or whatever. To me,
or contemplation.
To me, the phrase do nothing with God felt like the best kind of lowering the bar and like working against this doer in me, you know? Okay, the point of this is to do nothing with God. So I would go into a room and close the door. There was this little conference room at work that nobody ever used. So I would go there for 15 minutes, close the door, And I would sit and sometimes close my eyes and I would breathe and I would be like, God, we're just going to do nothing together for a while. Mm. And while your body's doing nothing, your brain keeps doing something, right? And so my brain often goes to like fixing problems, right? Like I think of things in my life and I try to fix them or solve them or organize them. And so I would just kind of like gently catch myself and be like, okay, we'll do that later. God, I'm going to let you hold that for now. You can fix that. And I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. Mm-hmm. It was the best thing for me in that season. Mm-hmm. Just to learn to be more surrendered to God and to like not think of myself as so in control and in charge of everything, kind of letting God be the one, letting God be God, right? And letting myself be a creature who he takes care of for 15 minutes, who's not so responsible for everything and everyone. So I think like for me, that 15-minute window in that season, and it was a busy season of marriage and parenting and work and everything, but that made all the difference to me to find time to just be. And I think maybe that was a form of beholding, just because I felt so loved by God in that time that he would give me this gift of time where I could offload all the responsibility and the weight I felt. Because responsibility is a big thing for me. It's a big theme. I feel responsible for everything and everyone. Mm-hmm. And for God to be like, I want to invite you to this space where you just take that backpack full of rocks off your back for a while and hand it over. And you just get to sit in my lap and just be loved by me for 15 minutes. Just 15 minutes. I didn't call it beholding. I called it do nothing with God. But
yeah, same
That's
thing
awesome.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're wired pretty similar, you and I, Hannah. And I feel like I've had seasons. So I work full time. I'm in school full time and just all the regular things of being a human, you know? And so life feels full for me. I'm like, I can't even imagine. I have friends that do all these same things and have small children. So I literally don't know how they're surviving. Mm. So right now is a season where I'm like, my beholding is like 5 minutes and it still can like affect me significantly. Mm. And so I feel like, you don't need a ton of time. More time is better, but like 5 minutes of the, I do the same, a similar practice. And John Mark Comer talks about, he starts his day, and I try to do this daily too, of like just sitting and recognizing God's presence with you. And he describes looking into the face of love, loving, like loving you. And so it's like just sitting and contemplating like how much, like, I'm so loved, so much more than I know. And I forget it every day, you know, just with the busyness of life. And so just take a moment and like, just let God love me is like transformational. Mm. It's wild. And it, literally 5 minutes can change my day. Anyway, I love it. So anyway, why do you think that it matters that we spend time in adoration and beholding and contemplating God's love?
So I have something that I read in a Tim Keller book that I kind of thought I could bring to this. I read Tim Keller's book on prayer several years ago now. But he says something about adoration in that book that I've really held with me and have sometimes talked about a little bit in worship gatherings on Sundays. But I think like when we think about adoration on a very preliminary level, it can feel like, well, why does God need us to flatter him and tell him how great he is all the time, right?
Doesn't he know this already?
Like, do I need to start by being like,
aren't there millions of
you're
people
so
doing
great.
This?
Yeah. God, you're awesome. You're amazing. Like, God just up there like with a big ego and needs people to just, you know, butter him up all the time. But Tim Keller says, no, it's not about, we're not informing God how great he is. He knows how great he is. But we need to remind ourselves of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was it.
Keller mic drop.
We need to remind ourselves of it. And he says, because it recenters us on what is actually true and real. Because, when we adore God, we acknowledge what is truly ultimate, we name who has final authority and we align ourselves with the way the world really is. So like when we are centering ourselves and things like our own reputation or success or approval control or comfort, when we are putting those things at the center, we are actually out of sync with reality. Mm. Because those things are idols that were never meant to carry the ultimate weight.
Yeah, right. So good.
But to adore mm-hmm. God is to say, you are God and I am not. And we're putting our faith in the only one being in the universe who can carry the weight mm-hmm. of all that hope, all that expectation. Mm-hmm. And that's reality, is that God is God. My comfort and my control are not God. I am not God. You know, my success in this or that thing is not God. Mm-hmm. God is God. And we fall out of alignment and we forget that regularly. So it's mm-hmm. like, it's for us to recenter ourselves. It's not like God needs it or can't survive without us adoring him. He would he would be who he is regardless of whether we adore him or not. But mm-hmm. it recenters us with what's true.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I was going to say like reorientates our heart to the things that really matter to him. And I mean, to your point, Hannah, of just like the messaging and the constant information and all of that, like those things are telling us, like the world is telling us what we should put our hope in, what we should like constantly, like mm-hmm. sometimes like without us even knowing it, like stopping and realizing like, oh, wow, like that movie was actually communicating, like I should be placing my value system in whatever it is. And so the moments where you can behold the Lord are moments that you're reorientating. Am I saying that word right?
It's awkward. Sure, let it go. You're good.
What was the word that Keller used? Because that was better.
Recentering.
Oh, yeah. I can say there that one. So yeah. I'm going to go with recentering.
Good.
Recenters your heart on the things that matter, on the Lord. For me, like one of the, I guess I have never really called it a practice either, beholding. Mm-hmm. But I know what you meant when you were like talking about it and when I was reading. Like a verse that does this for me often, and this is from a spiritual mentor from afar, Francis Chan.
Oh, yes.
He read this one, actually, I think it was at Passion, this one session. He was like, I just want us to read this passage of scripture, and I just want us to sit with it for like 10 minutes. It was like 10 minutes of silence. And it was Revelation 4, the throne room of God.
Yes.
And so I will read that sometimes in my own life, where I'm like, God, I just need to recenter my heart right now and just be reminded of what's taking place right now in heaven. And so I'll read Revelation 4. And it like does that for me. It has a way of like reorienting my heart of like, okay, like I'm in the presence of God right now. And this is what's happening right now up in heaven. And I get to pray to him. I get to commune with him. I get to be with him in this moment. It has this way of like kind of resetting the noise in my life.
Yes. It's like nothing else matters.
Yes. Mm.
This is the most important thing. Yeah. And it reminds you, like, this is actually the most important thing.
Yes. 100%. So sometimes I'll read that passage of scripture mm-hmm. if I'm having like a really hard time, just, I don't know, quieting my thoughts, quieting my heart, quieting my life. Mm. I'm frustrated or upset. Like, that's such a great centering passage for me of like, mm-hmm. okay, this is who I'm talking to. Like, this is, I'm coming into his presence right now. It's not just a flippant thing that I'm doing. Yeah. Like, I get to commune with him. Like, this is the God of the universe with the thunder and the lightning and the beasts who are just trying to cover themselves because mm-hmm. he's so holy. Like, this is the God who's invited me in to come and commune with him. Like, it's just, it's been really special for me. I will never forget that message. And it's been pretty transformational for me and my journey.
Yeah.
So I thought of that too when you just this word behold of like, yeah, that's what that passage of scripture kind of does.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to something else that I was thinking about. So in the Rich Velotis devotional, which I'm using this as my Advent devotional this year. They pulled out just a few of the times that God says, behold. This is only a couple of them. This is not all of them. Mm-hmm. But it says in Old Testament and New Testament, behold, I am sending you a messenger. Behold, I bring you good tidings. Behold, the Lamb of God. Behold, the Lion of Judah. Behold, the bridegroom comes. Behold, the hour comes. Behold, I'm telling you a mystery. Behold, I am laying a foundation stone in Zion. And this one is from Revelation. Behold, he is coming on the clouds and everyone shall see him. Mm-hmm. And it's just like God wants to like wants us to orient our attention back to what he's doing and who he is. And we need that. And I wasn't really planning on talking about this. It just occurred to me. But like I think about I think we also just we need to be reminded of how loved we are and all that God has done to express his love to us. Mm-hmm. I even think about like, so in Genesis, when, you know, Adam and Eve choose to sin, it was like the crux of the deception of the serpent was that God doesn't actually love you. Like, he's not actually caring for you. He doesn't actually love you. He's withholding something from you.
Yeah.
And I think the enemy is still trying to convince us of that all the time.
Yeah.
Totally. And there's something I think we just need to remind ourselves. Like, I'm so loved. And God has expressed his love to me so creatively, so consistently. Even when I forget it or I don't feel like I'm experiencing it, I can bring my attention back to the throne room of God. I can bring my attention back to whatever. So I feel like it is, like, we need it in our souls. We need to do this. And there's a real enemy that wants us to forget.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He uses
all sorts of, he uses whatever he can get his hands
on. Even the distractions, even as we're talking about, you know, all these little things that fill our time. It's like, and I think it is, like, not an accident. Like, the enemy's using it for sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
So with that, when you reflect on the story of Jesus' birth and the incarnation, are there any ways you feel like those can help kind of direct our attention towards love and beholding, adoration?
I mean, there are several people in the story who come and see, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's a pretty broad spectrum of people from this socioeconomic spectrum of the time, right? Mm-hmm. From these shepherds who are basically, you know, laborers out in the fields with the animals. They come.
Yep.
They're the first ones who are invited to come and see. Mm-hmm. They're the first ones, you know, other than Joseph and Mary, to come and see. And then a few years later, we hear about the Magi, these
wise or rich men.
From, you know, from far away who travel a long way to come and behold and come and see this newborn, you know, king of the Jews. So I think I'm trying to figure out what you pull from that. Is it just that the invitation is
For everyone?
For everyone,
yeah, and I think, okay, so the other people that I think about in this story are Anna and Simeon, who get to see the baby Jesus in the temple when he's dedicated. And these are people who have been like long waiting God's, the fulfillment of God's promise. Like they've believed it and trusted in it and now they get to see it.
Yes.
And
talk about patient attentiveness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Haven't they literally been living in the temple? How long have they been living in
years.
The temple waiting?
Years.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I think, with all of these people, with the shepherds and the, it's like, it to me, it feels like the story of Jesus' birth is like God is fulfilling his promise and he wants you to see it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the, that's what I think of when I think of behold and all those, the scripture that I just referenced quickly before. It was like God is up to something and he wants us to pay attention to it, to see it. And I do think we need to like be available to that. But also I think we can proactively like choose to like pause and pay attention and say, what is God doing right now? And how can I reorient my attention towards those things? Because we think about, we get distracted by so many things and, or like the responsibility gene like takes over and you're like, I have to do all of these things. And it's like, yeah, we've got stuff to do while we're here. Certainly we've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
But also God is at work. And we get to witness it. And that is like the most beautiful thing.
Yes. I just remembered something that might be an interesting story to bring in. This is not from the incarnation story, but my community group and I were just talking about this past week about the account of Mary and Martha from the Gospels. And, you know, basically in the story, Jesus goes to visit his friends Mary and Martha at their house, mm-hmm. and they have two different responses to Jesus coming. Mm-hmm. Martha goes into the kitchen and starts making preparations, you know, because Jesus is bringing 12 hungry disciples in with him. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all coming into our house. They need to be fed. They need to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. Mary goes and sits at Jesus' feet and just listens mm-hmm. while he talks. And to be honest, this story has always rubbed me the wrong way because I'm like, I feel like Martha is doing what you should do when yes. 13 men come to your house. Yes,
and that's yep. the cultural expectation on her.
Right.
Is that like, yeah, if someone comes to your house, you serve them and you feed them.
Right? She's taking care of them. She's mm-hmm. being hospitable. Like, she's mm-hmm. being responsible. Mm-hmm. Right? And Martha's basically like, Jesus, would you tell my sister to get in here and help me? Like, I can't do this all by myself. Yeah. You know? She shouldn't so be slacking good. Off like this. You mm-hmm. know? And... Mm-hmm. Jesus says, Martha, you are I forget
worried about many things.
Worried. I'm like, is it upset, concerned, worried about many things, but only one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen what is best and it will not be taken away from her.
Yeah.
And I think there's part of me that always gets a little mad at Jesus, like, but Mary really should have helped her, you know?
or like, couldn't you perform a miracle and like bust out some fish and loaves so right? that Martha could come sit down too.
That's right.
That's what I always think about. Right. Hello. Or tell everyone you're fasting and she can stop working or something. Right. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
So I still feel like I have to ponder that one a little bit, but it's interesting to me that Martha was worried about many things and none of them were something that Jesus expected of her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or ultimately needed or wanted from her. Mm-hmm. He wanted her to want his presence the most, mm-hmm. not to do all this stuff for him and his friends.
Yeah.
He wanted to be able to do something for her. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like, as I sit with that, there's probably some deep words that can speak to me and people like me with the responsibility gene about what does Jesus actually want from me? He wants me to be with him. Mm-hmm. And all these things I put on myself and I expect of myself and I think that other people or even God expects of me, is it possible God doesn't really expect all that much from me? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm putting things on myself that God himself doesn't put on me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think those things can also work against this beholding, right? I just don't mm-hmm. have time to do it because I have to do all this other stuff to be this good person, mm-hmm. this good, responsible human being.
Yeah.
And it's good to want to be a good and responsible human being, but it's not the ultimate thing. Or maybe it flows out of, it needs to flow out of love for Jesus and yeah. receiving Jesus' love first. And I don't always start in that place, you know?
Yeah.
So good. It just reminds me of, did I share this on the last podcast? Maybe I did. Mm. But I don't know. I do feel like one of the things that fatherhood has taught me is just this like new lens of looking through the eyes of God as our father. So one of my son's favorite things to do in this season is something called scooping.
Oh yes.
You did I
tell
share
us
this
about scooping? Oh,
okay. Yeah. So but it's to that point, right? It's like he's not doing anything. One, he's not doing anything for me in that moment. Two, it's not like accomplishing anything grand or grandiose, the process of scooping, it's just simply fun. Mm-hmm. And me as a dad, like, I just want to do it with them all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, many people look at it probably as like silly. I mean, there's the endearment of like, oh, that's just really cute. But it's not really accomplishing much. Mm-hmm. We're just playing. We're just together.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
And so to your point, Hannah, of just like, yeah, beholding of just like, I actually really love what you were describing of like doing nothing with God, because mm-hmm. that kind of is beholding. It's just recognizing like, you are God and I just want to be here with you.
Yeah. And I think there's something there too. It's maybe not beholding by definition, but I think it kind of is like I think we also often forget, or at least I do, I'm speaking about myself here, like I do think a part of beholding and adoring God is like also just experiencing enjoyment and fun with him, mm-hmm. and knowing that he delights in that. Mm-hmm. And I can forget that. I think like, yeah, same. All the time. I can just so easily forget and think that I need to produce and I need to do these things and be about the holy work, whatever that is, in my life or in the world or in the lives of people. And it's like, God also has something. Like, he, just the same way you love sitting and playing with True, like, yeah. he loves to do that with us too.
Totally.
And just, like, enjoying things with no product at the end.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Nothing to show for it except relationship.
Yeah.
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 Yep.
It's good.
It's been.
Do you guys have any thoughts on how, like, worship and music can kind of help direct us in this way?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I feel like that's kind of the aim of what we're trying to do, I think, and in yeah. worship when we're leading people is to pull their attention towards Jesus.
Yes.
We're pointing to Jesus, who he is. Come and behold him. I mean, we're doing that, I think, in song a lot of times. Mm. And it's cool because it's like different facets, you know, too. You have mm-hmm. songs that are just, you know, singing about God and his character and who he is. You have songs that are more of like a prayer of like, God, like, I need your presence. I need your love. We need your love. We need your forgiveness. You know, like, so there's just beautiful ways of interacting with, I feel like, that beholding too. And yeah. oh, yeah, it's just interesting because, like, I was just thinking, I was like, that's literally what we're actually trying to do, I think, at,
yeah,
in our
that's
worship
like the
services.
Point of worship.
Yeah,
it's like we're not just singing words.
Right.
Right. We're like shifting, hopefully, shifting our attention towards God.
Yep.
Yeah, in that moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting how music can also stretch out the words and make you say the words more slowly, right?
Yeah,
like if I
good.
Like, there's an old Keith Green song called "Lord, You're Beautiful," and the lyrics are, "Oh Lord, You're beautiful. Your face is all I seek, and when Your eyes are on this child, Your grace abounds to me." Mm-hmm. That took me about 6 seconds to say that, but when I sing it, "Oh Lord, You're beautiful." That took me about 6 seconds just to say the
that
words,
part.
Oh, yeah. Lord, you're beautiful. Yeah. So my brain had to dwell on those words much longer than they normally would if I were to just say them.
Yeah.
And yeah. it's now set to a melody that I'm going to internalize into my brain
yeah.
and into my heart yeah. in a different way. So I think that music can have a really primary role in beholding. Or even I think about, you know, I've had a lot more exposure in the last decade of my life to like gospel music and worship. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes in gospel music, you might repeat the same chorus or refrain
yeah.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people from the tradition I grew up with would have a hard time seeing the value of that and would be like, it's boring. Why are we singing the same chorus over and over and over again? But then your experience when you're actually in it, or my experience, is, oh my goodness, I am now meditating on these
yes.
words.
Yeah.
Because when I sing, and I'm trying to think of like a chorus, when I sing You Deserve It, you know, the first time, and then when I sing it the eighth time, you know, like it starts to get into you in a
yes.
different way, or different
yeah.
layers of it start to hit you, you know. If you sing
yeah.
about
100%.
God being your friend, or God being worthy of praise, or so sometimes we need to actually repeat the same truth about God over and over and over again, you know,
because
it gets into us in a different way. So I do think that is in a very physical sense and in a very like time-based sense of like drawing out a certain meditation about God. I think that singing and worship have a lot to bring to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. I was trying to think back to my childhood and like how many sermons I remember from the church that I attended that the pastor gave. I remember us spending a year on Romans.
Whoa.
We did a year-long study on Romans.
Holy
deep dive.
It was a deep dive. I don't remember any of it because it was way over my head at that time. But it's interesting because I can think back to that same time period and I can remember multiple songs and actually still some of the lyrics of those songs. Like, do you guys remember Shine, Jesus, Shine?
Yeah. Shine, Jesus, shine.
fill this land with. Yeah.
Okay. Comes sorry, right we're not going to turn this into a singing podcast.
But that's crazy because I haven't heard that song in, gosh, probably 15 years, 15, 20 years.
But you can still pull it
But I can still pull it out and remember the lyrics of it and the melody.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to the power of music of like, I remember we tackled Romans for a year, but I don't remember much of the content. But I remember these songs that I grew up with that we sang together as a community. Mm-hmm. That did express deep truths about Jesus and who he is and who his character is. Mm-hmm. And, so I think that's like a piece too with when worship, that's super cool and incredible. You're engaging multiple facets of your brain and soul.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Yeah, it's good. It helps us stop and turn our attention.
Yeah.
For sure.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Do you guys have any other thoughts or reflections on love and adoring, beholding, before we wrap here?
I just really appreciate the topic. I actually have a couple resources
that
I thought I could potentially recommend. I don't know if...
I'll take them down. We'll make sure that they make it into the show notes.
There are two books.
Okay.
One is a book by A.W. Tozer called The Knowledge of the Holy. This is a book that Crystal Sinuous always tells us he reads every year. Each chapter of it focuses on one attribute of God. And the premise of the book is that what you think about, what comes into your mind when you think of God is the most important thing about you.
Mm-hmm.
Like your ideas about God will determine everything else in your life.
Especially like what you think God thinks about you.
Yes.
Especially.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that book is a really great resource. Mm-hmm. There's another one that is a devotional that my mom gave me that sits on my nightstand called 31 Days of Praise by Ruth Myers. And that just has like every day has a written out prayer that is just a prayer of adoration to God for one aspect of his character or what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really have found in my life in these past several years I think when I was growing up, we used to always just make up prayers out of our heads, and that was the main way and the holiest way to pray, you know?
I know what I mean to pray.
Right.
I love that. Yeah.
But I found so much more value in written out prayers, whether they're traditional prayers or prayers by contemporary brothers and sisters in the church, prayers that somebody else has written thoughtfully, and these prayers of adoration are really great to help put words into my mind and heart to then to pray to God. So, and there are 31, so you can kind of do it one, one day a month, or you can space it out and do one a week and then move to the next one or whatever works for you. But those are two books that I think are kind of helpful resources when it comes to adoration and beholding.
Love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to recommend one, but I'm like, I had just begun it, so I don't know if it's actually good or not.
That's okay. We'll
but
take it
actually
anyway.
Is. It's called Beloved, and it's by Francis Chan. It's his brand new book. So I ordered it, and I'm in chapter one, and it's great so far, but I can't speak to the whole length of the book.
I feel like we can generally trust Francis Chan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've read enough books by him that I feel like I would feel good recommending that.
Well, and it's cool, too, because it's like his heart in writing the book was like, I felt like I really understood for years and years and years, like, a good understanding of God's holiness, but I often missed how he calls me beloved and the belovedness of our relationship. And so I, like, was reading the little synopsis, and I was like, oh, man, I feel like that would be really good to read. So that's why I picked it up.
Okay,
I'm on chapter
while
one.
While we're on it, now you just reminded me of, it was written for women, but it's not just for women. Anybody could get something out of it. But I got it as a young woman, and it actually had a really significant role in me placing my faith in Jesus. But it's similar idea to the Francis Chan book. It's called Spoken For, and it's by Robin Jones Gunn and Alyssa Bethke. And
cool.
And they're just talking about all the different ways. It's a bunch of different stories and scripture and different ways to understand how God sees you. Mm-hmm. And I will say some of the metaphors and the stories they use don't resonate with me anymore. I'm like, that has some weird implications to it. But I still think overall is a wonderful book. And the best thing, actually, the best thing that I got out of it is that they have a page where they wrote down all the different ways that God describes like his love for us or how he sees us. Mm. And they encourage people to spend time looking at the list and sitting with it and choose one and like let that one that resonates and let like just keep telling yourself, like keep reminding yourself that's how God sees you. Mm-hmm. And Beloved was the one that stuck out for me. And I gave the book to my sister after that. And the one that resonated with her was, he calls this a peculiar treasure. And I don't remember where that comes from, but like just this like special little thing. And my sister, like she collects teacups and things like that. So that resonated with her. She's like, same way. I just like love, I love this thing with its quirkiness and its weirdness and the ways that it works and doesn't work. And I just love it. And so anyway, so I recommend a book like that where it's like, oh yeah, this is, God loves us so much. And we can so easily forget.
That's really cool.
Nice.
Okay, well, it's now become a tradition, so we have to, I think, end our conversation with, we're flipping it, what's the worst, most overrated, or most overplayed Christmas music? Oh, I can't. The one you can't stand. Answers for this.
Are you going to share yours too, Christian?
Yes, it's a hot take. I don't know if you have listened to the podcast yet, but Matt was so deeply offended, and my mom has literally threatened to, like, excommunicate me from the family over this opinion, but I really don't like, oh my gosh, why can't I think of her name now? Oh yeah, I hate Amy Grant Christmas music.
Oh, see, I love that.
Yeah, most people do. Most people do. I don't like it. I don't like
so
it.
Funny.
I think my mom.
All of it, both albums, The Home for Christmas and
I just don't really like it. I really like the song Emmanuel.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's
well,
it.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, it's so fun.
You actually played that recently, Hannah, I think, for us at some point. I think we were talking about the synth line in...
Yes, it's so synthy.
Yeah,
it's
in Emmanuel.
Great.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like the synth line.
Yes. It's a banger. Yeah.
It is. But the rest of it, I think my mom would just play it on repeat for the entire month of December in my entire childhood, and I just don't like it. Isaiah also, I think, Matt's song was Christmas Shoes, which I also think is an awful Christmas song.
Well, yeah, that's the low-hanging fruit, though. I mean, who likes that song?
Yeah, that's going to be mine.
I feel like that
Isaiah
song
liked
gets a lot
it.
Of hate.
Isaiah was like, that is such a good song. And I'm like, why do you like to hurt yourself?
Was he
like, why
was he being
trash?
Ironic? Was he
I don't
being
think
honest?
So. Oh. I don't think so. I don't know.
Well, oh, man.
Anyway, what are other Christmas music that is just like... not your fave.
Okay, a song that has grown on me, and honestly, a lot of it is due to Hannah's arrangement of this particular tune. We did this in 2020, and your arrangement is great. But I've actually never been a huge fan of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
I love that one.
Which I know, and I'm weird for this, because I'm like an artist, and like the thing about that song is like, it's so cool, man, because it's like moody, you know, but we're talking about rejoicing, but it's minor. So you just feel all the feels. It's just like kind of depressing to me, and I just don't love it. But I will say, Hannah has a really cool arrangement that we did in 2020 with like the haunting ooze and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, super cool. Yeah, that so that,
on
that, that, then it grew on me.
So
that
the original,
Spotify,
not
yes, it is on Spotify, and it's awesome. So it's grown on me since then. And we also sing it every year, basically, around Blackhawk. So it's just one of those songs that I'm like, okay, it's okay now. Started off in a, like, I just don't really like this song. But now it's risen to, like, okay.
So, anyways. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
Yeah, absolutely. Mine was going to be Christmas Shoes, too, but.
Do you want to talk about it?
I don't even think anything needs to be said.
Do we need to process it?
It's just so depressing.
It's just a weird, there's so many things about the song that I'm just like, it's like really unrealistic. It's really just weird.
I'm also like, who wrote this and why did you think this needed to exist in the world? I just don't understand.
There's a movie about it. Did you know that?
Yes.
I did not.
They made a movie called Christmas Shoes, I think. I never watched
it. Does
it
have the song
about
in
it?
I'm sure it probably does have the song.
It must.
Yeah, it's basically just the story of a mom getting sick. And the little boy wants to make her Christmas special, and she dies in the end. And it's just depressing.
It's just terrible.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's the pinnacle of Christmas schmaltz, really. Oh, man. Okay, I have one.
Okay.
This may also be a hot take. I don't know if I'm allowed to hate on a Paul McCartney song, but Happy Xmas War is Over, where the kids are like,
Yeah.
If you want it, I'm like, oh no, not this. Are you serious? I have to listen to these kids for like 3 minutes straight. Kill me now.
That's amazing.
Oh, that kids choir.
You gotta get Hannah Bussey needs to get her hands on that kids choir.
I've heard good kids choir. I'm just glad I ain't one of them.
That wasn't one of them.
But I'm sure they're very sweet. You know.
Also, maybe that's just how they were directed to sing, you know?
You never know.
Okay.
You never know.
Sure. Now we live in a world with, like, Melodyne, where that could all be somewhat fixed with pitch correction.
It was probably intentional, because they're probably like, I like how it's kind of pitchy and imperfect, and maybe it was an artistic decision.
Probably some cool artistic decision, but
it just doesn't resonate. Work for me personally, but, you know, it's okay if others love that song. I will allow you to love it.
Yep. Feel the same way with Christmas Shoes.
I will continue to switch the station when it comes on.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Don't understand it, but for everyone who loves it, more you power to you.
Yeah.
You do you. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much, guys. It's been super fun having these conversations with you. And so thanks for diving into the topics, for your thoughtfulness and your honesty and your vulnerability as we've talked about these different things. I'm so, so grateful for who you are and how you lead our church. So... yeah, I just think you're the best.
You too, Christian. You too. We're grateful for you. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, so fun. Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. We hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a great New Year. The podcast will be taking a break for the month of January just to give our team some time to rest and recover over the holidays. And so we'll be back in February with something new for you. So we'll see you then. Bye. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Steps. Don't forget to check out the show notes for a list of resources if you'd like to keep the conversation going. If you want to learn more about how to get connected at Blackhawk or simply find tools to help you grow, check out blackhawk.church/hub. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend and subscribe so you won't miss future episodes. Until next time, let's keep following Jesus together.